Hey, it's Leo for actualized.org. And in this episode, I'm going to be talking about understanding meaning, purpose, and value, because this notion is central to how you live your life. Life is so utterly meaningless, it's meaningful. This is a very foundational topic. It's going to be worth it to you to listen to this whole episode all the way through. There's a lot of confusion that I see out there with newbies and even intermediate people in personal development who just don't properly understand where meaning comes from and what it actually is. And this is especially a problem because of my life purpose course. People either take the life purpose course or they hear me talking about the life purpose course, and then they assume that what I believe is that there is some sort of life purpose out there in the ether floating around, which you can discover for yourself, and then your life is going to be peachy if you just live according to that purpose. But of course, that's not what I mean by life purpose at all. Life purpose, as I talk about it in the course, and I say it there, but I'll repeat it here. It's about how to construct meaning in your life. The key word there being construct. It's a construction. And it's very important that you're conscious that that's what you're doing, is that you're constructing. So what I want to help you to do is just to understand that all meaning, all purpose, all value is constructed by the human mind, and that it's not found out in the world anywhere. That's very important. That might seem obvious in a certain sense. It's very obvious. But to understand all the ramifications of this, that takes going down a couple of steps in depth here. And we're going to do that. So all meaning, all purpose, and all value, and I'm using these words interchangeably throughout this episode, and I'll just be referring to all of it as basically meaning. Meaning is relative. The problem is when people hold it as being an absolute. Now, what's the difference between relative and absolute? Relative means that it's relative to other things and that it's a conceptual construction, whereas absolute would mean that it's inherent to reality. So, people think that there's a lot of stuff in life that has meaning. And when you talk to them about it, they tend to believe that the meaning is not of their own making, but is inherent to reality. And that this meaning is, therefore, constant for everybody. And this is a very, very wrong way to look at life. And they're not conscious how they actually create the meaning themselves, for themselves. And this gets them stuck with whatever meanings they happen to think are real, without realizing that none of it is real and that they are constructing it all along. You will experience massive growth and maturity if you realize this for yourself and all of its implications. But before you get the fruit of that growth, you're first going to have to go through quite a bit of confusion, depression, and nihilism. You're going to have to go over this hump, past this hump, and then you will experience the growth and the maturity. And most people never do that in life, and therefore, they really have a backwards relationship to all the meanings that they create in their life. So why is meaning relative? Well, to really appreciate that, what you need to do is you need to sit down and ask yourself, what is meaning? What is meaning? What is it? Existentially speaking, what is meaning? Where does it come from? Why does it exist? What is its purpose? Have you ever asked yourself that question in your life? And I do mean that you asked yourself and actually contemplated it for yourself, rather than getting the answer from somebody else. Because see, the problem is is that we tend to, even when we ask these questions, we tend to ask it of somebody, or we tend to get the answer from society somewhere. Like, you right now want to get the answer from me. And of course, I'm going to give you the answer. But the problem is that it's not enough for you to get the answer. You have to derive the answer for yourself so that you see how the pieces fit together and why it works the way it works. That's what actually grows you. Hearing the answer in and of itself doesn't really grow you. Believing the answer doesn't grow you either. It actually gets you a sort of false sense of understanding. So you seriously need to do this. We're going to sort of do it together here as best as we can, but also you need to do it by yourself. After this episode is done, later this week, whenever you want to do it, you need to sit down and ask yourself, what is meaning? And let a natural answer come up, not something that you read about in a book. So what we're going to do here to get you started on that process is we're going to look at an object. You can take any ordinary object and just sit down with it. Here, we've got a banana. Regular old banana. Nice, yummy, juicy banana. So here it is. Now, as you sit there and look at it, I want you to start to contemplate, what does this banana mean? What is its meaning? What is its purpose? What is the point of bananas? What is its value? Is it a good banana? Is it a bad banana? Is it positive? Is it negative? What is it? Why is it? What does its existence mean? And just sit there and actually seriously contemplate that and see what comes up. You never know what comes up. You start to ruminate about this and you start to ask yourself, like, well, is what the banana means to me the same as what the banana means to you? Or to my dog? Or to God? Or to the universe? Or to itself? If we just take humans for a moment and we ask ourselves, what does a banana mean to humans? Well, to us, most likely it means food. We tend to think of bananas that way. After all, they're all pretty yummy. They got calories in there. We can use this to fuel our day. But what if you take somebody who is allergic to bananas? Let's say there was such a person. A banana could kill such a person if they're really allergic. Let's just imagine that. So in that case, what would be the meaning of this banana to that person? Would it be the same as it is for you? Let's say today you missed breakfast and you didn't eat anything all day. And now you're watching this and now you're starting to go hungry. Your stomach is churning. Oh, you really want this banana, huh? See? So to you, it really means one thing. But what would it mean if you had an allergy to bananas? What would it mean to you if you ever ate a banana in your life and you got sick, just not even from the banana, but you just happened to get sick after eating that banana? Maybe you got some food poisoning or whatever. People didn't wash it properly for you and you ate it. What would your reaction be to bananas now after you had a violent reaction to some banana? See, you'd have a very different reaction. It would have a different meaning for you, which starts to get you to wonder, like, oh, so the same object can have different meanings to different people. Not only that, the same object could have different meanings to the same person. If you just ate 50 bananas and I show you one more, you're not going to think of this as food anymore. See? But when you're starving, you'll think of it as food. If I show it to your dog isn't going to consider this food because dogs don't eat bananas. Neither will your cat. What will they do? They'll probably ignore it. They won't care about it. And if we show this to any other kind of creature, like an ant or somebody like that, they also probably won't care about it. They won't see it as food. To them, it might have no meaning at all. Whereas to you, it might have a very important meaning if you haven't eaten for days and this is your only meal. See? So already this starts to betray the relative nature of meaning. What this shows us is that actually meaning, all meaning, can only mean something for a who. I'm a who, you're a who, your dog's a who. A who, you can think of it as a perspective, one perspective on life, or an entity, or a creature, or an organism. Only for that organism is there meaning? There isn't meaning in the abstract. There is only meaning subjectively for an individual. Now, why is that? Because a thing can only be significant to another thing relative to which it is trying to produce a benefit, or it's producing a negative benefit, which is harm. So see, what meaning is about benefits and harms. But benefits and harms are not absolute things. There's no one thing in the universe that is a constant benefit to everybody or a constant harm to somebody. It always depends on who you are, what situation you're in. So it depends on the context of the situation. It's important to wonder who would arbitrate between what is significant and what's not significant within reality. Significance is the same thing as meaning. It's not found out in the world. Significance is relative to your life, to a life. If you didn't have a life, nothing would be significant to you. Things are significant to you because they can either help or harm your life. Significance is relative to survival. And this notion of survival is a rather abstract notion. It doesn't just mean your physical surviving every single day that you wake up. Of course, it does mean that, but it means a lot more than that. Survival pretty much entails everything that you do in your life. It includes waking up. It includes going to the bathroom. It includes food. It includes your career. It includes any business that you do, pursuing money, spending that money, pursuing health, and all the social stuff that you do, having sex, having relationships, having children. All of that is what we're meaning here by the notion of survival. That's your whole life. So relative to that, things have meaning or significance. And then relative to somebody else's life, there's a different set of significance that objects have. Now, what's really interesting about meanings is that they can conflict with each other. Because since meaning is relative to the self, I'm a self, you're a self, your dog's a self, let's say. Because the self is defined as the opposite of other, we can get into conflicts of significance and of meaning. So what do I mean by self defined as other? Well, to say that I'm a self means that I'm not you. As obvious as that seems, people don't get that. That's an important flip side of the coin, is that there's self and then there's other. And that's relative. So to you, you're a self and I'm the other for you. Now that's obvious, but let's take the example of an asteroid hurling at the surface of the Earth. And it's a big asteroid. It's going to wipe out whichever city it hits. It's not so big it'll wipe out the whole planet, but just one city. So it'll destroy everything in that city. And let's say that it has to hit some city. Now, it could either hit my city or your city, but we live in two different cities. And let's say that now we're sitting and we're waiting for this asteroid to hit. The question is this asteroid significant or meaningful? Well, to us as humans who are living in these cities, it very much so is, because it's a direct threat to our survival. That's the only reason it's meaningful. If the asteroid was going to bounce off the Earth and not hurt anybody, would it be significant? No, we wouldn't care about it. We care about it because it threatens our survival. And that's an interesting thing to notice about meaning and about significance, is that the most meaningful and the most significant things in the world, in your entire life, are those which threaten your life. Which should already betray to you that meaning and significance are completely relative to your survival and to really nothing else. And then the less that it threatens your survival or the less that it benefits your survival, then the less meaningful it is until it basically whittles down to complete irrelevance. So if this asteroid is going to hit one of our cities, and let's say that we're going to flip a coin to decide if it's going to hit your city or my city. So we flip the coin. I win. It's not going to hit my city. It's going to hit your city. I'm thrilled because I get to live. To me, this is a very positive meaning because otherwise I would have died. For you, on the other hand, it's the exact opposite. It's a very negative meaning because it means you're going to die. And if the situation were reversed, it would be reversed. So this just is a very stark example that starts to show you how much meaning and significance is connected to your survival. Now, this is a very important point because we, as self-survival machines, tend to be very biased, and we tend to want to survive. And this tends to make us blind to seeing reality for what it is, because we have a horse in the race, so to speak. We care about whether we die or not. And in fact, our entire neural system, our entire psyche, is designed so that we care and so that we live our life this way. And in fact, there is no other reason why significance or meaning exists but for that function. That's why it exists. Significance and meaning is not just something you find out there in the world. Significance and meaning is something that the human mind created so that it could navigate reality and not kill itself. As obvious as that is, a lot of people don't get this. And they certainly don't get the full ramifications of this. So let's try to help you to see why this is so significant. Ironic to say that it's significant when in fact we're saying that there is no such thing as absolute significance. So when I'm talking about significance or meaning, what that includes is a lot of other stuff. It includes all notions of good versus bad. So start to connect what I'm saying to everything that you think is good and bad in the world, because that's what I'm talking about. I'm not just talking about abstractions, philosophical abstractions here. I'm talking about every single thing in the world that you think is good or bad is relative to your survival. See, it's biased by your desire to live and is completely dependent on you. It's only from your perspective. It's not absolute. Also, all notions of positive and negative. All priorities that you assign to things in life. For example, you might say, well, my children are number one priority. If you have children, they probably would be. And then your business is maybe a number two priority. And then washing the dishes, maybe a number three priority. See, so you're prioritizing things in life. Now, are these priorities real in the absolute sense? Of course not. This is a projection of your mind, which is helping you to deal with the stuff that you need to do as a survival machine in the world. Because your children, your business, even washing the dishes, these are all survival activities. Also, this notion includes making sense of life, all attempts to make sense of life. So if you're sitting there at night looking up at the stars and you're wondering, what does this all mean? What is the significance of all this? Why is this earth here and this creation and all this? Why am I conscious? So see, you're trying to ascribe a meaning to all this. And that's a subjective thing. It also includes all notions of goals, especially ultimate goals. So you might have an ultimate goal for your personal life, for your relationship, for your family, maybe for your business. You have some ultimate goal. Maybe you want to retire somewhere, move somewhere, do something, achieve something with your career. Maybe you're a scientist and you want to make some groundbreaking physics discovery which transforms humanity's understanding of the cosmos. And you think that's a very significant thing. And what I'm telling you is that you're creating that. It's not the case that scientific discoveries are inherently meaningful. You have created that for yourself, and now you believe that. And notice that when you believe that something is meaningful, it's not simply that, oh yeah, I created this and it's meaningful. No. The way that it works for most people is very unconsciously. So what they'll say is, this is actually meaningful. That's why I'm doing it. I must do this because it's so meaningful. So meaning is tricky in that sense, is that when you start to hold something as meaningful, you start to think of it as real, not as something that you invented. Meaning also includes all notions of worth. This includes self-worth, other worth. So what are people worth to you? What are your children worth to you? And I don't just mean monetary value, although that also is included in meaning. So all monetary values, I hope it's clear that those are all relative. It's not like a banana is worth actually 10 cents or 100 yen or 20 pesos. Yes, I mean, you see how it's arbitrary. What is a banana worth? It changes every single day, even just given human conventions. So in the absolute sense, I hope you can see that a banana doesn't actually have any worth, nor do you have any worth. Not monetary worth, but not even self-worth. Because self-worth becomes a self-esteem problem for people. They think like, oh, I'm not worthy, I'm not good enough. But where's that coming from? Does the universe know that you're not good enough? Or is that something you're making up, something you're inventing? But see, when you invent that you're not good enough, that's a big problem because you don't hold it as like, oh, yeah, I invented that I'm not good enough. No. When you think you're not good enough, you're not attractive enough, you're not masculine enough, you're not feminine enough, you're not pretty enough, you're not smart enough, whatever, you're not enough. You think that's real. You think that's the way it is. You think that's absolute. You don't think that's relative. That's why it's a problem for you. So the solution there is to realize you're doing it. And also, meaning includes all notions of better or worse. So think about all the situations in your life where you've thought, oh man, this is going so great, this is such a good situation. Or all the situations where you're like, oh man, this is terrible, this is such a terrible situation, it's so bad. Like maybe you got sick, or maybe your cat got run over by a car, and man, that's such a terrible situation, that's so bad. It's so sad, it's so depressing. You know, death, what could be more negative than death? But even death is a relative thing. In the absolute sense, is death bad? No, of course not. Simply, you're programmed by nature to avoid death, and you hold it as the ultimate bad because that is the ultimate standard by which you judge everything else, you see? Because meaning is designed to serve your life, death is held as the ultimate negative meaning. And to overcome that and to see that you're creating that, that's not actually the case, but that you're creating that, that's where this gets a little bit deeper, you see? Because when I talk about your death, like let's say you go to the doctor tomorrow and he tells you you're going to have cancer and you're going to die in a couple of months, you're going to have a very negative reaction to that. All sorts of negative emotions and, oh my God, this is such a terrible thing. You're going to start to cry and all this is going to happen. Even though intellectually you might say, oh yeah, well, I know all meanings are constructed. And yet here you are constructing this negative meaning from death. When in fact, does death have a negative meaning? No, not at all. So what might it look like if you actually realized that death does not have a negative meaning? That death is meaningless. And that life is meaningless. See, this is where people don't want to go. They're okay with thinking about a banana not having any meaning. That's okay. That's not controversial. But when it comes to your death, when it comes to your children, when it comes to your family, your country, your God, all your favorite ideologies, money, morality, the environment. Do you care about the environment? Values such as freedom, equality, justice, happiness, health, your car, your house, your beautiful spouse, travel, good food, not catching diseases, your favorite cultural icons, literature, love, politics, truth. All of these, you think these have inherent meaning. What might it be like to realize that these are all relative things and that their meaning is simply a creation of your own mind. Something that you project out into the world. Imagine looking at your children and realizing they have no meaning. Imagine looking at society and realizing it has no meaning. Imagine looking at science, if you're a fan of science, and realizing that it's completely meaningless. See? That's the level of depth that we're talking about here. To see all the consequences, all the ripple effects of what I'm talking about here. That can be deep. And a lot of people never want to go here. But, of course, this is exactly where we need to go in order to get the biggest growth. Meaning versus meaninglessness is a duality. Significance versus insignificance is a duality. Why is that important? Because a duality means that you don't just have meaningful objects out in the world. The meaningful object is always defined relative to a meaningless object. That's how meaning operates. You see, it's a system of contrasts. And you need both sides of the coin for it to work. Like heads and tails in black and white. And of course, what you should already know is the truth of non-duality. At least you should know it conceptually. And the truth of non-duality tells us that everything is non-dual, which means that all dualities must ultimately collapse into a unity. And that's exactly what I'm telling you here. Meaning is the contrast between what is and isn't useful to you as a survival machine. That's all that it really is. And notice that there is nothing absolutely useful to anybody. What's useful to you today might be useless to you tomorrow and harmful to you the next day. What's useful to you to survive might be harmful to another creature. For example, we tend to think that, well, if an asteroid hits the planet and destroys all of humanity, that would be a terrible thing. Perhaps the worst thing that could happen to humanity. And yet, that's only from our human perspective. Because, hey, humanity might die out, but then other creatures and life forms might now get a chance to rise to the top and to flourish. And maybe they will take care of the planet better than we did. But of course, that's not a notion we like to entertain, because we're very biased to our human species perspective. And we want to survive not just individuals, but also as a species. But of course, that's completely biased. See, so it's relative. An asteroid hitting the Earth might be a great thing for cockroaches. And we forget that. And this distorts our perceptions of reality. Because we tend to think that, well, reality is there to serve us. And of course, it seems that way because mostly what people are preoccupied with in their lives is self-survival. When your occupation is self-survival and that's all you care about, then of course you don't care about the truth. There's no room for the truth, because to actually discover the truth, you have to be very objective. You have to step outside of your personal agenda and even your species agenda and even the agenda of life, even the agenda of evolution. A lot of people make the mistake of thinking, well, life is just about survival and reproduction. And then they live their whole life that way. But if you live your whole life that way, you're not going to have a very happy life. Because you are going to be then dictated by just the forces of what it takes to survive. You're going to have a very miserable life living that way. And people think, well, but Leo, that's all there is. There's nothing more. Well, maybe there is something more. You just haven't explored it because you're so focused on survival. And that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. You need to start to notice that your mind projects meaning onto reality. The whole point of the ego and the whole point of selfishness is to overlay a weighted field of polarity on top of reality, like a net, which helps you to navigate an otherwise unnavigable terrain. Why is this important? Well, you can really appreciate this if you think the way that a robotics engineer might. Let's say that we're engineering a robot and we want this robot to be a self-sufficient creature, like let's say like your dog. So how would we create this robot? Well, first we'd need to give it perceptions. It would need to be able to see, hear, smell, taste, touch, etc. But once we give all these to the robot, it's got all the raw data that it needs. It's got a connection to reality, let's say. But is that enough for it to survive? No, clearly not. Because let's say this robot sees a cliff and it just runs right over the cliff, falls to its death. Is that a problem for the robot? No, of course not. Because for the robot, you didn't program any meaning. You didn't create this projected matrix of polarity, of things that are more important, less important. It doesn't know good from bad, positive from negative, because these things don't actually exist until you create them. So if you want this robot to actually survive, you're going to need to teach it how to recognize situations which are threatening to its survival. Cliffs and so forth. And you're going to need to teach it situations which are beneficial to its survival, like how to get electricity. So maybe this robot is going to see a wall socket that it can plug itself into to get its juice. And for it, that will be like its food. And you could program it to be very appetizing. So every time your robot walks by a wall socket, oh man, it's so juicy. I just want to stick myself right in there, charge up. And that looks very appetizing. And it gets its emotions revving up. And anytime it's running low on juice, then it starts to feel some negative emotions, starts to feel some pain in its belly, so to speak. And then it runs around looking for a wall socket. And if anytime it's walking by a cliff, then it experiences a deep terror and fear of death, and it runs away from the cliff. And what are we describing here? We're describing the robot called you. See, your mind uses meanings to manipulate you. That is why meaning exists. That's the only reason it exists. If not for that, the notion of something meaning something doesn't make sense. You can't just have a meaning out there floating in the ether as though, like, this means something to God or whatever. No, it only means something to you. And even then, that's always subject to change. Just depends. You know, some people might be happy if a city got obliterated with an asteroid. There are people right now who don't like their neighbors. One city doesn't like a neighboring city, and they would be thrilled if one of their neighboring cities that they didn't like, one of their enemy cities, was destroyed by an asteroid, just so long it didn't hurt them too much. See? That would be fine. But then if an asteroid was big enough now to kill the whole human race, well, now we got a problem. Now all of a sudden we have to band together to work to stop that. You see? So it's relative. So the size of the asteroid will determine whether you think of it as a positive or negative. A little one, it's okay. If it hits your enemy, oh, great, I love it. If it hits you or it wipes out the whole human race and you along with it, oh man, that's a terrible thing. That's how it works. You need to notice that you are a puppet of your mind's meaning-making apparatus. It's got you by the balls or by the ovaries, whichever one, and it's dictating your entire life. This is a very, ironically again, significant factor in your life, is whether you realize this or not. Now you might wonder, well, what about from God's point of view? Doesn't stuff mean stuff from God's point of view? People misunderstand what God is and what God's point of view is. God's point of view is not the point of view of a person or of a who. God is not some grand who sitting up in the clouds to whom everything is meaningful. God is the absence of who. God is the absence of personhood. God is complete objectivity. From God's point of view, everything is 100% equal in weight. There are no polarities for God. God doesn't discriminate. That's why people say God is all loving. God is all loving because to him, everything is cool. He can't be hurt. It's not a he, it's an it. It's not even an it. We don't have a good reference for it. But it is the closest thing we can get. To God, everything is equally insignificant. Or you could flip it around and say everything is equally significant. It doesn't matter because the only notion of significance that's of significance is when there's contrasts. As soon as you eliminate the contrast, the whole thing collapses into irrelevance. From God's point of view, everything is being. And that should be the point of view that you aspire to, is to see everything as being. Because being is all that there actually is. Meanings are illusions. Meanings are something we construct. Being is what actually is. And what is being? Well, being is what you see right in front of you. You might say it's like the matter of which the universe is made out of. But not your concept of matter. I mean actual being, the way you're experiencing with your consciousness. Being. If you just stay very conscious and objective with being, you'll notice that being has no meaning, no purpose, and no value. Nor does it need these things. Nor is it diminished by not having these things. You might say that being's purpose or meaning is simply to be. That's its job. Its job is to be. And being, what most people don't realize, is that being is infinitely more profound than meaning. People think that, oh, meaning, if I strip my life of meaning, then what's that going to be? It's going to be a very miserable, bad life. No, not at all. It would be infinitely profound because you would then experience God's eye view of reality. That's a very profound thing. Far more profound than meaning. Running around looking for meaning, which is what most people do. They chase meaning. The reason they chase meaning is because they think that it's inherent to reality. If they didn't think that, they wouldn't chase it so much, you see. Meaning is a sneaky mechanism, and it operates like an illusion because that's its job. Its job is to get you to chase. That's what it's there for. And if you realize that it was an illusion, then it wouldn't feel as real and as solid as it would otherwise, and then you would stop chasing it. And that would undermine your self-survival reflex. And some part of you is afraid to go down that road because you're worried about, well, how am I going to survive if I undermine my self-survival reflex? But see, the problem is that you've been creating meaning in your life way beyond what you need to survive, to the point where it has become toxic and neurotic. And actually, this is the main reason why people become interested in personal development. Why are you interested in personal development? Because you want to improve your life. Why do you want to improve your life? Because some aspects of your life suck, right? You're not happy with them. But why is that? Well, that's because you created all these meanings as you were growing up. Your family and people around you were all creating meanings the way you were. Your culture fed you with meanings. So all these meanings were created. And then you got on board with that. And so you started creating meanings, and you started attaching meanings to this and to that. You thought that a marriage is good, a hot girlfriend is good, a nice husband is good, lots of money is good, this is good, that is good. And so you did all this, you slapped all these labels on this reality. You did this all unconsciously without realizing what you're actually doing. You thought that hot girlfriend actually was good, and that marriage actually was good, and that money is inherently good, without realizing that, no, you were just imagining that to get yourself into action. And you were creating these meanings unconsciously. And now you got so addicted to this process that now, whenever you're not getting the thing that you labeled as good, and you're getting the thing that you labeled as bad or harmful, that now, oh, all of a sudden, all your negative emotions come up and you're hot and bothered by all this, and now you suffer. See? And you can't stop the suffering because you literally believe that that good thing that you need isn't given to you, and so that you actually believe that's harming you. And that bad thing, you actually believe that that's harming you too. And that's why you suffer. And now if I tell you that that's all a construction of your mind, you say, well, Leo, that's crazy. That's crazy. You're telling me money's a construction of my mind? No, man, I need money to live. That's actually real. That's not a construction of my mind. And so on with everything else, with your girlfriend and your boyfriend and your marriage and this and that and your house and your children and all that. You think that that's all real, and that's why you're chasing it. And you'll be chasing it till you're dead. And you will never get satisfaction from that process, because that process is not designed to satisfy you. You wonder why you're not satisfied with life? It's not because life is shitty. It's because you've assigned all these meanings to things, and you've disconnected yourself from being, which is the only thing there is of life. You're wrapped up in illusions. And of course, illusions are hollow, and therefore your life feels hollow because you keep chasing phantoms, which you can never catch. They always slip through your fingers. No matter how much meaningful stuff you get, have you noticed that you always need more? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how many billions of dollars, how many hot wives or great children you have. None of it matters. You will always feel hollow inside, so long as you're disconnected from being. Because all those things are illusions. But people don't realize that. There are two ways to construct meaning: unconsciously and consciously. If you construct meaning unconsciously, you will have that situation that I just explained to you. If you become conscious, though, of how meaning is created, and you go through this somewhat painful process to discover how much you've been projecting, and you develop the maturity to really take that on and to actually accept it, and then you learn how your mind is actually creating meaning, and then you take control of that mechanism, you can do it consciously. Which means that you can create meaning, and there's nothing wrong with creating meaning, as long as you realize that you're creating meaning, and also you think about why you're creating it, for what purpose, what do you hope to achieve by it. And you realize the limitations of the process. So I'm not saying you should cut out all meaning entirely, but really just become conscious of this so you're not chasing phantoms. Okay, that's it for right now. I'm going to do a quick intermission, take a little break so my mind is sharp, and then I'll be back here in a second. Don't go anywhere with some more. All right, let's do some Q&A and answer some objections, because I noticed that a lot of people get stuck on this topic, even though I think it's a very simple topic. Understanding what meaning is not that complicated, but for some reason, it just does not compute in people's minds, and they have all sorts of objections which keep them from embracing what I'm saying. So the first objection might sound something like this: but Leo, isn't it the case that we see progress within evolution? It seems like our universe is evolving, life on Earth is evolving, the entire planet is evolving, governments, societies, cultures, technology, science, it's all progressing, it's all evolving, it's all becoming more sophisticated, more complicated. Isn't it all moving towards something, some ultimate grand purpose or point, like the singularity or something like that? There's no denying that evolution seems to be progressing towards more complexity. Where that ultimately leads to, we don't know yet. We can speculate, but we don't really know. But it's very dangerous to fall into this rat race mentality and thinking that progress will get you to some ultimate state of nirvana. It won't. Your progress is always progressing just to more being. More being, more being, more being, more being. At the end of the rainbow is just more being. The entire rainbow is made out of being. The beginning of the rainbow is being. It's all being. progress is a relative notion. Progress is something that some organisms might want and think is favorable, others may not. It's a subjective and relative thing. Being is just what it is. Even if progress is taking place, it's still taking place within being. People these days get caught up in this rat race mentality in the same way that they do with their careers and retirement. They think something like, well, if I work for the next 50 years really hard, then I can retire and spend the next 10 years of my life, maybe the last 10, 20 years of my life, on a beach somewhere just chilling out, and that's going to be the perfect life. But then what happens is that when those people do get there, they realize that all there is just being. And this being is rather boring to them because throughout those 50 years, they never cultivated an appreciation of being, a consciousness of being. They thought they were going to make it to someplace without realizing that all there is just being. All there was just being, and they could have saved themselves 50 years of drudgery and grind by accepting being right now rather than working towards some destination. You can work towards a destination. There's no problem with that per se. Just don't trick yourself into thinking that the destination is the whole point of the journey. That's not the case. When you become really conscious, you realize it's all just being. And a lot of very successful people fall into this trap. I like to talk about Elon Musk and rag on him a little bit, precisely because a lot of people hold him up as sort of the role model of what a really good, high-quality human being should be doing. It's like they should be advancing society, the cutting edge of science and progress and inventing stuff and moving the human race forward and all that. And that's life purpose. There's nothing wrong with life purpose. I did a whole course on life purpose. I'm big on life purpose, but you have to recognize the limits of that. See, a lot of people don't recognize that actually Elon Musk is not conscious of this being situation here. He is very hooked on meaning. For him, there's apparently a very big meaning in creating all these businesses and working very, very hard to run them all. And there's nothing wrong with that per se. But he is disconnected from being, which becomes a problem because it never ends, you see. That's why you need to create business after business after business. No matter how many businesses you create and how successful they are, you could fly yourself to Mars, to Pluto, to the edge of the solar system. It doesn't matter. It's never going to satisfy because no matter where you get to, all you have is being. The meaning that you're attaching to the stuff you're creating, that's illusion. You created that. And you need to become conscious of that as quickly as possible in your life to avoid negative consequences. The next objection goes something like, but Leo, this is so negative. You're stripping meaning of everything, and this is going to make me depressed. Negative is a meaning. When I tell you that reality is meaningless and that all meanings are projections, and you think that's depressing and negative, that's you continuing to assign and project a meaning onto what I told you. You get that? Meaninglessness isn't negative. That would be a meaning. Meaninglessness is meaningless. You get that? You got to get that. I mean, it's pretty simple, but for some people, again, it doesn't compute. But I know it can be depressing. I've gone through this. You can face an existential crisis here. Because what you do is you build up your whole life as about achieving meaning. Family, career, business, science, helping people in your community, you know, loving people, compassion, all this sort of stuff. But you never realize that it's just a castle you built up in the sky. The reason that this news is depressing to you at first, and it might be for a while, is because you've been avoiding being in your life. It takes real maturity and consciousness to fully embrace being. and the emptiness of being. This is something that most people do not do. They, in fact, actively avoid it by going around chasing more meaning. See, they come up with some meaning. They don't even know that they constructed the meaning. They chase the meaning. They acquire it. Then they want more because meaning never satisfies you, because meaning is an illusion. So you chase more and more and more, and you're never fulfilled. And then when someone tells you that what you're doing is you're just like running around like a mouse in a wheel, that depresses you. Because you want more. You constantly keep wanting more. But you want more in the wrong direction. See? There's plenty to be had when you become conscious of infinite being. Being is absolutely infinite. There's more of it than you can ever possibly want. But meaning is completely illusory and non-existent. You can never get enough of something which isn't real. So the harsh reality here is that there's nothing more than being. Being is all that there is. That's the bad news. The good news is that being is absolutely infinite, and it's all you could ever possibly want. And being is infinitely more profound than meaning. People think that if I just lose my meaning, then what am I going to do in life? I'm going to be so depressed. No, that's just the initial hump. Get over that hump and you realize that actually meaning was such a cheap thing compared to being. Being is so much better. It's so much deeper. It's so much richer. It's so much more mysterious and amazing. That there is being, but that it has no meaning and that it's groundless. But you have to become conscious of that. And it takes work to become conscious of that. And most people don't do the work to become conscious of that because they're scared off by this initial hump of negativity or depression. So don't get caught in that trap. Watch yourself for assigning negative meanings to meaninglessness. The next objection goes like this. But Leo, how am I supposed to use this? What you're talking about here just isn't practical. I'm interested in building my business and creating an awesome kind of life. And now you're coming in here and you're screwing up my whole plans. You're not motivating me. You're actually demotivating me. Well, here's the thing about this. What I'm actually telling you is incredibly practical. You holding it as impractical is really just because what I'm doing is I'm undermining your ego-driven lifestyle. Of course, to your ego-driven lifestyle, what I'm telling you is like putting a wrench in the works of that whole project. It has very significant practical consequences. It's just that you don't want those. You want to continue your ego-driven lifestyle. So, of course, what I'm telling you seems impractical. And it seems like it's moving you in the opposite direction. Well, you know what? That's why this stuff I keep saying is counterintuitive. Because a lot of times to grow, you got to move backwards. Or at least it seems as though you're moving backwards. Your problem is not that you don't have enough meaning in your life. It's that you assign all the wrong meanings to all the wrong stuff and you're not conscious of the fact that you're doing this. And that you are not really in touch with being. If you were fully in touch with being, it would give you infinite satisfaction. You can just sit there all day and be happy on your couch. You wouldn't need to go anywhere. But that's not the case for most people. Because you haven't developed that yet. You haven't realized yet that there's nowhere to go. There's nothing to do. There's nothing to achieve. You can do those things. But if you're doing those things because you think they're going to make you happy, which is why most people do them, you're caught in the illusion of the rat race. And you're going to be constantly, forever disappointed. And you're not even going to know why you're disappointed. It's just going to feel like your entire life is lackluster. Like it's always less than you thought it could be. The reason that is because that's what you get when you go around chasing illusions, not realizing that they're illusions. The nature of an illusion is that it's hollow. So your life feels hollow because it is hollow. the way that you're currently living it. The other objection is, but Leo, now there's no more reason for me to take action. After all, you just said I could just sit there on my ass all day and do nothing. Is that what you want me to do? The reality is that there never was a reason for you to do anything. Reasons were inventions that society, culture, and your parents fed you to get you to be a good little monkey to do what they wanted you to do. Why? So that they could survive easier, and so you could survive easier. That's why. There was no other reason. There is no reason to do anything. There's no reason to stay alive. There's no reason to live. There's no reason to eat. There's no reason to have sex. There's no reason to do anything. There's no reason to personally develop yourself. There's no reason to pursue truth. There's no reason to get enlightened. There's no reason to be happy or to be sad. But people get addicted to these reasons. And then their whole life becomes about reasons, without realizing that reasons are something you construct after the fact to justify what you did, or sometimes you construct it before the fact as well in order to get yourself to do stuff that you probably really shouldn't have been doing in the first place. See, the reason you need your reasons is because you're trying to do stuff that you don't really even want to do. And then you need all sorts of reasons to motivate yourself. But when you really want to just do something, when you have a natural, spontaneous desire to do something, you're just going to do it. You don't need a reason to do it. You don't need to rationalize it away. Most of your life, you've been living it by acting out of delusion. This is called attachment. You've been attached to things that you thought you should or you have to do, or that there are good reasons to do. Well, what nobody told you is that all that is a crock, that there are no reasons for anything. And now what you're being presented with here is the option to act from truth, which means the option to act from detachment, where you don't need anything, you don't need to do anything, but you can if you want to, if you have the genuine desire to. And isn't that what you want in your life? Don't you want your whole life just to be you doing what you desire? Isn't one of the things you most resent about life is having to do things you don't really want to do? See? Well, that's all the stuff that has to do with reasons and meanings that have been created. If you get rid of all the meanings and all the reasons, then what you're left with is just, you're free. You're free to play the game however you want. There's really two options here. You can grind through life, which is obligating yourself with all these meanings and reasons and having them run your life unconsciously, or you can free yourself of those and then you can play the same way that a child plays in a playground. If you see a child in a sandbox building a sandcastle, you don't ask him, well, what's the reason? Why are you building that sandcastle? There is no reason. He's playing. You see, that child is still fresh. His consciousness is still fresh. He was recently born. So he's actually closer to consciousness and to being than you are as an adult. As an adult, your mind gets filled with all sorts of nonsense and reasons and justifications and all this, and all these cultural conditioning things and values and principles. And so now you're just bogged down with this stuff, whereas a child can just play. And a child enjoys himself, generally speaking, when he's playing. So the choice is yours. Do you want your life to be a grind or it to be a play? The next objection is, but Leo, should I then have no values and no purpose? Seems like that's what you're saying. No, that's not what I'm saying. Meaning, value, and purpose is still useful. In practice, you will still have them. In fact, I think to really self-actualize, you need to construct a really compelling life purpose to get you out of bed in the morning. Life purpose is very helpful. My life purpose course is very practical. You just need to realize that these are relative things, that these are constructions, so that you're not attached to your purpose. See? So you don't become neurotic about it. So you don't become a slave of your purpose. So you're flexible. That's what we're talking about. Now you might say, well, Leo, so does this mean this is just a word game? Because I thought you were saying I have to get rid of values and meanings and purposes, and now you're saying that I need to construct them. So you're just playing word games. I mean, I already have values and I already have certain kind of meanings. So what are you talking about here? What is supposed to change? No, it's not just a word game. Because right now, if you're like most people, you believe in absolute meaning. And the change comes when you realize that there is no such thing as absolute meaning and that all your meaning is relative. And now you have more flexibility and control with that. It might seem like a philosophical difference. Absolute, relative, what's the big difference? It seems subtle when you intellectualize about it. But when you actually experience it in practice, when you actually sit down and realize, like, there's nothing to do, there's nowhere to go. Like, literally, there's nothing to do and nowhere to go. And nothing has any meaning whatsoever, including my continuing to exist has no meaning whatsoever. And once you resign yourself to that, that's a really big change. Then, when you go and take action from that, first you realize that really deeply, then you start to go take action from it, and it's a very different way of taking action. It might seem like the action is the same. You might still go to work. You might still start a business. You might still have a family. But the reasons why you're doing those things are going to be very different. That's the key. That's the difference. Now, of course, some people might think here, but Leo, isn't this nihilism? Isn't that what you're really talking about? Nihilism says that nothing is meaningful. There's no purpose to anything. Yes, of course. What I'm saying is nihilism. Spirituality is nihilism actualized. That's all it is. This is a counterintuitive thing, though. People don't like to hear this. They think that spirituality is the opposite of nihilism, because isn't spirituality about having all these higher consciousness values like love and goodness and consciousness and God and passion and all this stuff, a lot of values in spirituality. But this is people who haven't really practiced spirituality. These are people who only believe in spirituality. What I said is that spirituality is nihilism actualized. And there are a lot of people who like to think about nihilism, and of course nihilism has a negative connotation to it, but all those people are doing, they're just believing, they're intellectualizing about nihilism, they're not realizing it. Even many nihilists, self-proclaimed nihilists, will not actually be nihilists in practice. What I'm talking about is being a nihilist in practice. Enlightenment is absolute nihilism. That's what it is. And all spiritual values ultimately stem from nihilism. Now, how can that be? That seems like a contradiction. Nihilism says there's no values, and yet spiritual values come from nihilism, and spiritual people tend to act in the most responsible and the most moral ways. Well, if they're really spiritual. If they're bullshit spiritual, then they act in very evil ways, like the Spanish Inquisition and so forth. So all the evils of religion, of course, nihilism unactualized. This is a counterintuitive thing, and I want to shoot a whole episode on nihilism specifically. But the reason this works is that once you realize that everything is meaningless, you are able to get in touch with being. And when you get in touch with being, that being is so profound and divine that it transforms you from the inside out. Not through any kind of moralizations. God doesn't give you some Ten Commandments to obey. That's not why you become moral. Simply because you realize that all being is infinite and remarkable in such a staggering way that you lose all sense of self-importance. And that ends up being the key to truly moral behavior, is losing a sense of self-importance. See? Because meanings charge your perceptions. When you remove all the meanings, your perceptions are clear and perfect and objective. And you see the magic of being, the beauty of it, the power of it. And this ends up being not a dry philosophical sort of thing, but a very human, a very rich religious experience. That's what's called a religious experience. Of course, a lot of people misinterpret that, and then they then build all sorts of moral systems around this. But see, because most people never actually reach true actualized nihilism, they stay stuck at the sort of intellectual level of spirituality. Now, there's the question of like, but what about Buddhism and, you know, other mystical traditions which encourage love and compassion? They don't seem very nihilistic. That's because you have to understand that most mainstream spirituality cannot come out and tell you the truth about what it is. Firstly, because a lot of people who do mainstream spirituality and teach mainstream spirituality are not themselves enlightened, so they don't know what they're talking about. That's number one. They're just talking stuff they read in a Bible or whatever, or some dogma that got handed down to them through their guru. They didn't experience it themselves. And secondly, because even if they did, they can't tell you outright what it is, because then it wouldn't be mainstream. The surest way to lose your audience and to make your teaching non-mainstream is by stripping it of all meaning. People just hate that. The mind hates it. It's an acquired taste, which is why there are so few spiritual masters and gurus out there. Because people generally don't want this stuff. So what teachings like Buddhism and Sufism and Christianity and whatever else, you know, these teachings that talk about compassion and love, what they do is they put the cart before the horse. They try to teach you the fruits of enlightenment without actually having people become enlightened, which is putting the cart before the horse. It creates a big problem. But in a sense, they have to do this because otherwise they could not sell their ideology to millions of people. Because people just don't handle the truth. The truth is something you have to have a really deep passion for, and you have to go pursue on your own and discover on your own. And then once you discover absolute nihilism and it transforms you, and then you become a mystic and you become loving as a result of that, see, then people will try to emulate you and they think, oh, I can do that too. I can just be loving. I can walk around and be loving. But see, what they don't realize is that with an ego, you can't walk around and be loving as you're projecting meanings everywhere and you're afraid of your own death and you're clinging to all your possessions and you're clinging to your house and your car and your bank account and your wife or your husband or your children. You're trying to protect all this stuff. You're so wrapped up in your egoic lifestyle that there's no way you can truly be compassionate. And what ends up happening is that when you preach compassion to people, when you moralize to them and tell them, you can't do this, you can't do that, and this is what this means, and God says the purpose of life is to be good and not to be evil, not to do sin and all this, when you set it up like that, then actually what you do is you set a person up for committing a lot of evil. Because you give them the idea that they can go out there and just be passionate. I mean, not passionate, but compassionate. And that they can be loving, when in fact, you're setting them up to fail. They can't be loving. They've never experienced unconditional love. They don't know what unconditional love is. They've never experienced the truth. They don't know where those moral principles are actually derived from because they never bothered to derive it for themselves. So, if you want to be like a mystic, do what the mystic does. Don't ape the mystic's results. Do what the mystic did. The core thing the mystic did is he found the truth. And then from that came all the quote-unquote good stuff. And see, the mystic always understands that there is no such thing as good, that these are projections. So even though he may act in a sort of good way, that's how people perceive him. In his own mind, he does not think of himself as acting in a good way, or as being loving, or as being selfless. He just has no self. It's a very big difference between acting selfless, that's impossible for a self to do, versus actually not having a self. That's possible, because that's the truth. It takes some work, but it's possible. And the last question here that I'm going to answer is, but Leo, I just don't buy it. Life is here. It must be here for a reason. Surely it has a purpose. Are you really saying that all of this life is just pointless? What you're asking with this question is, what is the nature of being? What is the nature of all of existence? That's what you're trying to understand. Without understanding that you're trying to understand it in the wrong way. You're trying to give being a certain sense of purpose or point or meaning, which actually completely underestimates the magnitude of what being is. Why is life here? Why does it seem to have a purpose? It's absolute infinity. You're inside absolute infinity. You are absolute infinity. Like that. Like that. It's just infinity. That's what it is. And you're sitting there asking for its purpose. That's only because you don't recognize what it is. When you recognize what it is, you're not going to ask for its purpose. It's going to be infinitely times larger than any purpose you could possibly imagine. It's empty of purpose. But that doesn't mean, ironically, that it's insignificant. It's the most significant thing that you'll ever experience in your life. But ironically, even though it sort of feels significant, it's actually meaningless. That's the paradoxical nature of the beast that we call reality. Now, of course, it's no good to just believe me on any of this stuff that I said. And there are different levels at which you can understand and internalize what I've said. First, there's the intellectual conceptual level. At least get it on that level. But that's not nearly good enough. What you need to do is you need to sit down and actually derive what I'm saying for yourself. Sit there with a banana or some object and think about, what does it mean? From whose point of view is it meaning? And how am I projecting the meaning on it? See how you're actually doing it. Once you see how you're doing it, that will start to loosen things up for you. Ultimately, you need to get to the point where you feel the meaninglessness of life down to your bones. Not intellectually, but down to your bones in a crippling sort of way where all your motivations are thrown under the bus, where you question everything, where you question why you're still alive today, where you question why you don't shoot yourself, where you question why you don't kill your kids, where you question why you should still go to work tomorrow, where you question everything, why you should be good, why you should be loving, why you should meditate, why you should pursue enlightenment or any of it, and ultimately realize that there is no reason. Even the pursuit of enlightenment or the truth is completely pointless. You need to come to that realization yourself and not just come to it and react against it, but come to it and accept it in a mature way and resign yourself to it such that it permeates your being and it rewires your entire motivational system. This is not going to happen without a midlife crisis. To really get what I'm saying here, you will have to experience a midlife crisis, and maybe more than one. And don't worry if this is not at the midpoint of your life. If you're only 15 years old or 25 years old, it doesn't matter. Have your midlife crisis as soon as possible. I was figuring this stuff out when I was still in middle school. That's when I really had my midlife crisis, was in middle school. And then that created the foundation for everything that I became after that. It was very important that I got it out of the way early in life. I realized the pointlessness of life back then, and I surrendered myself to it. And it was a tough time, a tough few months, tough few years. Expect that for a few months or a few years of this process, you will be groundless. You will feel confused. You will feel lost. You might feel dejected. You might be in a funk. You might feel unmotivated. But that process, that's true growth happening right there. Just make sure you don't spiral out of control down to some sort of existentialist, nihilist rabbit hole where you get depressed and bummed out and take everything very negatively, right? Because this whole thing is meaningless. So there's nothing negative about it. And in fact, once you come out the other end, you realize that, man, this is the most positive thing ever, because this means reality is totally free. I am free to construct whatever meanings I want. I am free to change them anytime I want. I'm free to do whatever I want. I'm free. I'm free. I'm free. And then from there, you can begin to take action again. You can still be very passionate about life. I'm not saying not to be passionate. In fact, if you want to be the most passionate person you can be, do what I'm telling you to do, even though it looks counterintuitive. But really, think of it like this. It's like popping a boil with a needle. If you have a nasty old cyst on your finger or whatever, and it's filled with pus, and it's just aching and aching and itching, you take a hot needle, you poke that thing. Yes, that process is painful and nasty, but you do that, and all the pus comes out, and then the thing heals up, and now you're happy. You're a happy camper. That's what this process is like. It doesn't take days. It usually takes months or years. So that's the reality of it. That's why most people don't do it. And then they suffer for it for the rest of their lives, because then they're stuck in this artificial matrix of meaning. I'll warn you to watch out for a trap, which is that even when you pop this boil and you realize the meaninglessness of it all, you're going to get sucked back into the illusion just by the fact that you're living in our society. And our society is filled with meanings, artificial meanings that just get thrust upon you. And so maybe you'll have a child, you'll have a family, you'll get a girlfriend, a wife, a husband, or you'll get a better career, or a house, and then that will become your meaning. And what you got to be very careful of is not to get sucked too much into that meaning, to always remind yourself that, okay, I've realized and understood that everything is meaningless. That is the foundation for everything else. I have to be very careful that I don't let the illusion then turn into the foundation. Because that can happen. You can very easily forget. So in practice, you might need to face this midlife crisis over and over and over again until you actually grasp it for good. And when you do have this midlife crisis, you will then become much more interested in spirituality and meditation and self-inquiry. And vice versa. The more that you do meditation, self-inquiry, And spirituality, the more it'll bring you to the brink of a midlife crisis. So these two things go hand in hand. That's not a mistake. Don't make the assumption that, oh man, something's going wrong with my meditation practice. No, if you're facing a midlife crisis, that's very healthy. That's very good. That's exactly what you want. So let me just paint a little final picture for you of what all of this that I'm talking about in this episode will look like in the end. After it's all said and done, after you go through this somewhat tortuous process, here's what you end up with. You will have realized that everything is absolutely pointless. And that this is not a problem, but this is actually a great thing. It will not disturb you in one bit. Your focus will shift to being from meaning, from having, and from doing. This being, you will develop a very intimate connection with it. You will develop your consciousness such that this being is very palpable every moment of your existence. And this being will give you unconditional satisfaction. You will no longer need to chase circumstances in life, but you will just sit there and be, no matter what's happening, and you'll be satisfied, and you'll be deeply happy. And you will be truly free to play life however you want, without moralizations, without obligations, without feeling pressured into doing it. And you will actually become playful. You will become spontaneous. You will become more creative. You will have much less stress. You'll be much more relaxed. You'll spend more time out in nature. You'll be comfortable with solitude. You won't need to have a bunch of people around you to keep you happy all the time. You won't need to go to parties. You won't need to chase career after career after career, or business success after business success after business success. And yet, you can still do that. You just won't hinge your happiness on it. You will be fully alive in every moment. You won't be waiting to get to some moment where it's like, oh yeah, now is great. Because you'll realize that all moments are equal. They're all the same. Doesn't matter what moment you're in. And so what that does, that allows you to enjoy every single moment. And if you think about it, isn't that what you want? Isn't that why you're doing personal development in the first place? Because right now in your life, you have a few moments sprinkled throughout your week where they're really great. But then 95% of the rest of the time, it's kind of boring, it's kind of lame, or it's negative and it's causing you suffering and stress. So what do you want? You want all of your moments to be good moments, right? So how do you do that? Can you do that by chasing stuff? Can you do that by having a lot of money and just like in the morning I'm doing drugs, in the afternoon I'm going to a party, in the evening I'm going to go have sex, then the next morning I'm doing another kind of drug, then the next afternoon I'm going to have a big business thing, then the next evening I'm going to do something else, then I'm doing something else. Can you do it that way? No, you see, you can't do that. You'll burn out. Even if you had all the money in the world, you would burn out doing it that way. That can't work. And even if you did that, it would not be fulfilling. You would find that you would actually become very miserable. You need to do it in a much more mellow way. The mellow way to do it is to ground yourself in being. And you will also stop clinging to moments. So when you're having a good moment, when you're with that amazing girlfriend or boyfriend, or when you're with your kids, or when you're in nature, or when you're doing a drug or whatever, that peak, you're not going to cling to it. Because you're going to realize like, oh yeah, that's just one moment out of all the moments. And all my moments are great moments because it's all being. Just different kinds of being. You see, you're not going to attach too much meaning to any one kind of being. Because you're going to have changed from the meaning-centered orientation towards life to the being-centered orientation towards life. And that, in a nutshell, is what all your personal development, all your consciousness work should be leading you towards. That's what it's about. So, in conclusion, stop chasing after meaning and start pursuing being. All right, that's it. Remember to click that like button for me. Come check out actualize.org. my website. See all the resources I have for you there. You can browse videos better. There are MP3s available for download for free if you want to watch these or listen to them on your mobile device. My blog, the forum, Life Purpose Course book list, more stuff to come. And most importantly, make sure that you stick around and make a habit of personal development. Watch every week's video. I'm always releasing new stuff. There's a lot of important stuff I still need to cover as we go forward, a lot of foundational topics that I've never talked about. I try to cover new topics every single week. There's hundreds of stuff that we need to cover, years and years of stuff. Make sure that you build your theoretical foundation. That's very important, because otherwise you're going to be going down dead ends and doing stuff and falling into traps. Build your theoretical foundation, and you do that by just watching the theory every single week. And then once you've got a few years of that under your belt, then you're going to be able to know how to navigate and know where to go, know which things are worthwhile to do and which things are not worthwhile to do. Ironically, right? Because I'm standing here talking about there not being meaning, and at the same time, all my videos are telling you what are the most worthwhile and meaningful things for you to be pursuing in life. That's because I'm talking about relative meaning, understanding that absolute meaning doesn't exist. See? So I speak from that perspective. Hopefully you can sit down and contemplate this stuff for yourself, figure it out so that when I'm speaking, you understand what I'm speaking about, relative versus absolute.